Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Dr. Hamadoun Touré, Secretary General of the International Telecommunication Union. Hamadoun, you have an amazing background, and you've done so much for the world. So thank you for sharing your extensive and considerable history of success and contributions to our audience.
Thank you, Stephen.
So Dr. Touré, what are your specific goals for the ITU in 2012 and for the future?
Wow, that's a really good question. But before I talk about the future, I would just want to say that during my first mandate, the first 4 years, I worked extremely hard to put ITU at the very center of the most pressing issues facing our members today, which, as you know, comprise 193 member states, governments, and around 700 members from the industry and academia. That's really very large and inclusive membership. And those, my goals then included digital inclusion, moving from the digital divide as we knew it on telephony to avoiding a potential broadband divide. Second very important element that I focused on was digital cybersecurity. And then, of course, climate change and green technology issues came out during that first term, and it was very important to put ICT in the center of that as well. There was another very important element, that which is emergency communications in case of natural disasters, especially with the climate change issues that are, unfortunately we are witnessing a lot of natural disasters, and ICT plays a key role in not only predicting, observing, and mitigating potential disasters, but also it comes as a matter of a disaster relief as well. Therefore, that's a very important element that I needed to coordinate worldwide. And last but not least, access to broadband. Now, when I was re-elected in 2010, my pledge for my current term was to keep ITU firmly focused on its core mandate, which is centered around effective management of the radio frequency spectrum. And you know, we had January a very successful World Radio Conference. We'll probably come back to that later on. And a collaborative development of new technical standards, which is, of course, the main reason of the creation of this organization back in 1865, was to create global standards. At the time, of course, it was for telegraph, but it evolved from to telecoms, to broadcasting, and to internet networking as well. And new initiatives designed to help developing countries improve their ICT penetration. I'm also using this second term to have a specific emphasis on programs to aid small island developing states and landlocked developing countries, which face special challenges in getting their people connected. And as before, I'm always striving to put forward the new efficiency mechanism for the union in our internal processes. I mean, I introduced a paperless environment. We introduced a new accounting system that worked very well and is saving us a lot of money and increased a lot of transparency in the management of the union, and to find new ways to strengthen our relationship with our membership base, and to continue to increase our influence across the industry. We've been serving for 147 years now. Two words would characterize the approach that I've taken: improvement and innovation.
Well, Dr. Touré, you've done an amazing job, and the ITU has an incredible history of contribution to the world. And in fact, to my audience, I really encourage them to engage in some way at your summits and forums and so on, because it really is the premier organization. Now, in the next question, what do you see as maybe one or two areas of controversy related to ICT?
Well, right now, of course, it's a very good question, because right now there are quite a lot of controversy over the upcoming conference in Dubai to review the international telecommunication regulations, which are the binding international treaty outlining the principles which govern the way international voice, data, and video traffic is handled, and laying the foundation for ongoing innovation and market growth. And as you know, the last ITRs were negotiated back in 1988, and there is a consensus that this text needs to be updated to reflect the dramatically different information and communication technology landscape of the 21st century. After 24 years, I believe that a lot of things have happened. So at the request of our members, we are convening the World Conference on International Telecommunications, or WICKET, which will take place in Dubai from 3 to 14 December this year. We've seen quite a lot people talking about how this conference is going to be about internet governance. In fact, nothing could be further from the truth. There are no proposal from our membership on this topic. Conversely, the conference will be looking at some of the very important issues that will determine the shape of tomorrow's industry, the ICT industry. And as I say, the 1988 treaty laid the foundation for the information society as we know it today. And I believe that the 2012 ITRs will lay the foundation for the knowledge society that we're aiming at. And this includes the human rights of access to communication, security of in the use of ICT, protection of critical network resources, the international framework that will be used for charging and accounting, including taxation, interconnection and interoperability issues, quality of service, and of course, we will talk about the ICT convergence, where I mentioned in the beginning, voice, video, and data are together. So one issue that seems sure to come off that will be of particular interest to consumers of is international roaming charges, for instance. Many consider this to be very high, the roaming charges, especially for developing countries. So members will be discussing what can be done to make mobile access more affordable to more people. Taxation, again, is another very important issue too. We need to ensure that taxes on technology goods and services are kept as low as possible to encourage more people to buy and use ICT services and applications. And finally, a very important issue for me personally, which I've always put forward since my first election, as I mentioned, is cybersecurity. It is essential in a globally connected world. Online access needs to be safe and secure and affordable. Right now, we lack international framework for tackling the growing problem of cyber criminality. We'll be discussing how we can advance our efforts to combat criminals and make the net a safer place for everyone, especially our children. And I always start with the children because I always say this is our common denominator. And at least that's one area where everybody will see the urgency so that we will walk as we talk. Because those issues can be very sensitive to a point that it can be taboo to talk about it. But we're saying no issue is taboo. We have to talk about it.
Dr. Turi, then, what do you see as maybe the top one ICT opportunity for, let's say, government and then industry and then academia?
Wow, that's a very good question. I think the opportunities of all these groups are linked to the importance of broadband. We need to get broadband networks in place as quickly as possible. Broadband networks are becoming as instrumental in social and economic development as transport, power, and water networks today. And that's one thing that I keep repeating in every meeting, especially when I'm talking to the political leaders, so that they put broadband as a priority on the national, so that every country has a national broadband plan. Studies now show that every 10 percentage point increase in broadband penetration delivers 1.3 growth boost in the economy. ITU figures show that there are now over 1 billion mobile broadband subscriptions worldwide. Mobile is said to be the access platform of choice for most people in the developing world, where fixed line penetration remains low. So, however, we well over half of the world population, from those in developing countries to those living in geographically isolated communities to marginalized groups like persons living with disabilities, the elderly, the illiterate, and housebound women are yet to get connected. And that makes digital inclusion a very important issue that needs to be tackled by every country, as well as huge opportunities for ICT companies and for academic institutions too, who can start delivering their training online, for instance. As you know, the world's largest, biggest universities are both online learning institutions, the Indira Gandhi National Open University in India or the Allama Iqbal Open University in Pakistan. I was in both countries just 2 weeks ago. And the Khan Academy, which was started by Sal Khan, now offers over 3,000 online training videos and has delivered over 16 million lessons worldwide. I believe that the other very important opportunity that we see today is an opportunity that is of interest to many political leaders, is job creation. And especially when you're talking about the financial crisis in Europe, you're talking about the Arab Spring, where the youngsters made those revolutions because they were out of jobs. And if they don't find new jobs in the next 6 months, there will be new revolutions, unfortunately. And we discussed this matter just 3 months ago in March in Doha during our Connect Arab Summit, where we had the Arab leaders and the industry leaders together to discuss the issues of interest for the region and how to move forward. I believe that the ICT sector has created more job opportunities than any other sector in the world. The 2/3 of the new jobs in the ICT in the world has been created in the ICT sector, and I see that trend continuing. And therefore, there is a real opportunity to have governments getting together with academia and industry to work hand in hand. The academia planning the right curriculums in the programs, in the training programs, and industry making use of it, and government, of course, putting the right regulatory framework to attract new jobs. I think those are complementary and they are very important issues for the world today.
You know, those are very progressive initiatives, and really the ITU being the hub of this ecosystem of over 190 countries and over 700 organizations worldwide. And I was also one of the speakers in one of the sessions at your World Summit recently in Geneva. Mm-hmm. And I saw the impact of the corporations, for example, the Intel World Ahead program, which tied into this more pervasive use of broadband, or the Ann Mai Chang of the U.S. State Department talking about their alliance program, again, to distribute broadband worldwide. And that's really being all at the ITU World Summit on the Information Society. So, again, you being the enabler of all of this.
Yeah.
Now, for my next question, at the WISIS, this World Summit on the Information Society, I noted some outstanding achievements, such as Kazakhstan with their second ranking in e-participation with the e-government program. And from what I understand and talking with them, I believe they're going to be awarded or recognized June 28th in New York at the United Nations. Can you speak more about this?
You know, Steve, as you rightly said, we were together at this WISIS forum that we organize annually around the May 17th, which is the International Telecommunication Day, which is the anniversary of the ITU's creation back in 1865, which is also the day declared by the United Nations World Summit on Information Society Day as the World Information Society Day. And we're very proud of the fact that all stakeholders come together and share their best practices and their experiences, so that we say we are in an information society, and it would be a shame if someone makes a mistake that was made somewhere for lack of information. It would be a shame if someone has to reinvent something that was already invented and missed and waste time for lack of information again. So we are very proud of the tremendous success of the WISIS Forum, and I really personally had a first-hand experience in learning about some of the very good success stories in many countries in the world. The 2012 event was the most well-attended ever, with over 1,300 delegates from over 115 countries, and a comprehensive program spanning over 140 different sessions. For the first time, we recognized outstanding achievements through the WISIS Project Prizes. And I mean, those awards were really a very strong competition, and only the best of the best were awarded. The participation of emerging nations like Kazakhstan, as you're asking, is particularly encouraging. And we are delighted that they were able to host their own country workshop on their achievements in e-government. As part of their e-government strategy, the Kazakh authority are working hard to improve both network infrastructure and online content and services. As you know, when I was creating the Broadband Commission for Digital Development, I invited my colleague, Director General of UNESCO, to join me in doing so, because my constituency is normally dealing with the infrastructure, and we needed someone who is dealing with the content, and they're complementary. The infrastructure without content on it will be useless, and content without infrastructure will not be shared enough, and therefore it will be meaningless. And this is what we see here, the online content and services coming together with the net infrastructure. So delegates to the WISIS Forum event presented the new e-government portal, which is one of the key elements of Kazakhstan's e-government system, and shared their approach and experience in developing this new resource to the benefit of other delegates looking to emulate their success. I mean, you are right to mention the Kazakhstan example, but there are many, many more countries that I came up with very good stories that others can share. And the good thing in this is that it becomes a win-win for everyone. You know, because we always say information is the only thing that when you share it, it's multiplied rather than divided as that, like any other thing that is material. Once you share it, it's divided. And we're getting that ability to share and have a multiplier effect and have other countries replicate and do the same thing without the original country losing anything, because it's a win-win for everyone. That's the beauty of the WISIS Forum, and we will certainly continue that.
Well, the gain is definitely more than additive. It's probably exponential in that when you share, and you do definitely get a force multiplier.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like it. It's a exponential growth. That is, and in fact, that's one of the key challenges we're facing, the exponential growth of data in this world, in this cyber world. And how do we make sure that there is enough infrastructure to cope with the demand in infrastructure that we have? How do we encourage more investment in infrastructure? That's one of the things that we're going to be discussing in Dubai for the week. That's the challenge for us, because content is there and it's going to grow exponentially. Imagine every citizen of this planet is, if they're accessing information, they are also a source of information. They can create the information and share it. This will have a tremendous multiplier effect.
You know, there was also tremendous excitement and sort of passion around enabling women and girls into technology. And I saw the recent announcement of Gina Davis being a representative on that behalf. Can you just speak very briefly on that?
Yeah, well, Gina is a wonderful lady who has done a lot of things personally to promote women and girls. And as you know, the theme of this year's World Information Society Day is the promotion of women and girls in the ICT. And we have decided in 2010, during the Plenipotentiary Conference in ITU in Mexico, to have a day for women and girls to promote, to make sure that women and girls are encouraged to be part of the ICT sector by making a career in the ICT sector, but also that they will be using ICT for their social and economic development. And we were very much honored that Gina Davis was one of the awardees this year of the World Information Society Day. Three women were awarded this year with together with Gina Davis. We had the president of Argentina, and Ms. Sun, the chairman president of Huawei company. And those are all three are very strong ladies, successful in their line of business. Gina Davis has been an inspirational leader and a role model for many women and girls, and of course for many men actually, and I'm one of them. And we were particularly honored that she has accepted to be a special ambassador for ICT and girls.
But it also speaks to your leadership, Dr. Turi, and also the ITU. So I congratulate you on reaching out and in ensuring that, you know, the over 50% of the population out there are empowered to engage in ICT. Now, my next question is about global GDP. Do you have a sense of how much is driven by ICT and the Internet?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I have some global figures, of course, by some analysts lately. We have the global analyst McKinsey that published a study last year. We showed that Internet accounts for 3.4% of global GDP in the 13 OECD countries they examined, and 21% of GDP growth in the last 5 years in mature countries. Now, ITU analysis of these figures indicate that this benefit is due to the spillover effect that ICTs and the Internet have on the rest of the economy. For this reason, ICTs are now being widely acknowledged to be the general purpose technology for GPTs. This means that just as electricity or railways in the past, ICTs now are playing an enabling role in unlocking economic growth in other sectors, be it transport, energy, or tourism, you name it. The contribution of the ICT sector to total value added as a percentage of GDP ranges from 2% to 15% in different countries. And as I mentioned to you earlier, that a 10% increase in broadband penetration equates to between 1.2 and 1.3 percentage growth of the GDP of a country, depending on whether it's a developing or developed country. So that's really a very important element. Now, the GDP value from vary from country to country. You have countries like Korea, Malaysia, Finland, Ireland, or Israel that are all at the high end of this scale, of the scale, around 15%, reflecting the sheer size and market share of ICT sector in their economies. And I believe that we are trying to put this as a key evidence for developing countries as well, because what is true for developed countries in the ICT field is also true for developing ones. As you can see, countries like Malaysia and Korea, they took off very fast because of the very positive ICT strategies that they put in place. And this is why it's important that every nation has a national plan, that every nation has a strategy, a national ICT strategy that's linking, that is seeing it in a dual mode, one as an industry in itself, and the second one as a tool for other sectors to also develop.
Well, we're down to maybe our last one or two questions. I know that you have to go to another meeting shortly, so The next question is your thoughts on ICT professionals, people working in the field. Do you feel that there should be some demonstrated professional development, adherence to ethics, personal responsibility, and public accountability? What are your thoughts on that?
That's a very difficult question when it comes to ethics, and it's a very sensitive one, but it's a very important one. And I have very strong views on that, so I'm happy to share them with you. First, professional best practice is to be encouraged in every industry. ITU itself has a comprehensive program of ongoing professional development, and we actively encourage our staff to constantly update their skills and acquire new talents through training, attending targeted conferences and workshops, and through membership of professional associations. And I really mean it, because when I first came on board here, I made sure that we are hiring people, professionals here in this union, not based on any political pressure. I have eliminated some candidates, some good candidates, maybe potentially good candidates, simply because I had pressure, political pressure, to recommend them, and I wouldn't want to have someone who is not going to be 100% loyal to the union, and who wouldn't feel that he's here based on his own merit. In addition, we have our own ethic office, which promulgates guidelines on professional ethics through regular in-house workshops, as well as serving as a focal point for individual staff wishing to consult on issues of professional ethics. We have zero tolerance, you know, and I mean it, and we have demonstrated that over the past few years, and let me tell you, it has increased the staff morale in the union, and they are doing over 100% of their abilities for the union, and I'm very proud of that. Thanks to that, we have an organization today, ITU, with a very balanced budget, with very strong programs that we are undertaking without asking additional money from our member states. We have really restated the trust between our members and ourselves. We are also the link between governments and private sector and the regulatory authorities, each of them knowing the role that they are playing, in this field. Roles that are different but complementary, and really that has put us in a very good course, because and this is why our finances are very clean today, and we're enjoying a really good financial management. Of course, given the new management tools that have been put in here that increases our transparency, the staff alike and the council members are all seeing the same information that I see at every given time, and they know where we are going. And to me, that's a very important element, and that only can be dealt with a really good ethical approach to all of the issues.
Well, Dr. Curry, I can definitely see that you are really exhibiting a model of professional development, ethical conduct, personal responsibility, and public accountability, and that's good to hear, and we're basically at the end of this interview. So, Hamadoun, thank you for coming in today. I know your schedule is demanding. You have to run away very quickly.
No, I admire the work you're doing. It's a very strong contribution to the information and communication technology sector. And please, Steve, continue to do it, because this is the greatest contribution that we're doing for humankind. ICT, is in the center of everything we do today. Our governments, our people, our economy, the education of our children our health will depend on how best we make use of those smart technologies. How do we use it in a smart manner as well, and how do we make it really available for our children and grandchildren? The younger generations are the biggest users of this, and we need to keep an eye on their safety and their well-being, and this is a common responsibility, and I'm really very proud that someone like you is also contributing very heavily in that, and I thank you very much for giving me this opportunity.
Well, thank you again, Dr. Turi, and I'm going to close off by saying I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Dr. Hamadoun Turi, Secretary General of the International Telecommunication Union.